And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Called Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Awakening Podcast. I'm your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson, here on American Family Radio. First and foremost, thank you. Thank you for your support. Thank you for your prayers. Thank you for your contributions. Thank you for all that you do to make this network possible. And thank you for your encouragement of me and the ministry and work that God has called me to do. First of all, I want to let you know that my organization, STAND, Staying True to America's National Destiny, has our annual STAND Awards dinner coming up on Tuesday, May the 12th at the Tyson's Corner Marriott at 7 p.m. Please put that on your schedule, put it in your calendar. If you live anywhere in the area, or even if you don't, I hope that you will come. We have plenty of rooms that will be available at the Marriott Hotel, Tyson's Corner Marriott Hotel. You can fly in from anywhere to either Dulles or Reagan National Airport and be with us. We're going to be honoring five great patriots. It's going to be a wonderful time, believe me. And we have honored some outstanding people. I mean, General Jerry Boykin and Jenny Thomas, wife of Clarence Thomas. If I go down the list, you know what? Let me add a few more in there, because I'm invariably going to leave some people out. But Dr. Alveda King, Alan West, Kenneth Blackwell, Brigitte Gabrielle, Tina Deskovich of Moms for Liberty, and on it goes. I mean, we've done this five times, so we've honored a total of somewhere in the vicinity of 20 to 25 honorees. Sometimes it's four, sometimes it's five, and I'll explain that later. But tickets will soon be available online at standamerica.us, standamerica.us. And I'll tell you more about that as it unfolds. Look, we've got a lot of things to talk about today, and so let's get right to it, shall we? The situation in Minneapolis, Minnesota, does appear to be moving in a better direction, because President Trump has now talked to Tim Walz, and I'll tell you, I don't know what to say for that man other than we just have to pray for him. I mean it. This guy is, he is in bad, bad shape. The man is just spiritually and morally, and I think even mentally, confused. And Jacob Fry, I mean, you know, he's just a radical leftist, a Marxist. But I'll tell you, I have to commend President Trump for his willingness to talk to these folks. Because in my view, when you call people Nazis, you call them Gestapo, you say that they're kidnapping people, that they're executing people in the streets, when you use these kinds of opprobrium and you vilify people in these horribly slanderous ways, I don't even know that you deserve a conversation, to tell you the truth. Because as I've said before, when you say to someone or about someone, that person is a Nazi, it's one thing to joke about that, if there can ever be a joke. Or to say it in a context where it's clearly not meant. But it's another thing to say it where you seem to mean it, where you actually seem to be describing people as behaving like Nazis and like the Gestapo. I mean, you all know that I used to do Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher fairly regularly. I must have been on there, I don't know, 7, 8, 9, maybe 10 times during the time that he had that program, several years he had it. And we were having a discussion about marijuana, and I didn't know this, but Bill Maher is apparently a big pothead, but I didn't know this. And I said, you know, he asked me what I thought. I said, I think the whole world would be a better place if we didn't have a single marijuana crop anywhere in the world. He called me a Nazi. I have to admit, I didn't take that seriously. He did apologize after the program, by the way, but I didn't take that seriously, because he wasn't claiming that I was doing the things that Nazis do. He was just basically, I think he was just viscerally reacting to the fact that, you know, it looked like I might be one of those people who would interfere with his ability to get high on marijuana. Of course, I couldn't. Nothing I could do about that. I was just musing, saying, yeah, I think we would be a better world if we didn't have any marijuana crime. He went off. But you know, when Tim Walz calls ICE agents, Gestapo and Nazis and secret police that they're executing people in the streets, he means all of that. And to me, that's code language for they're killers. Kill them before they kill you. I mean, is there any other way you can interpret that? Because the Nazis were genocidal maniacs. So isn't that what he's saying? I give President Trump a lot of credit for being forgiving. I'll tell you, if I had been president and he talked about me that way, I'd have had a hard time having a telephone conversation with him. I'm not saying I couldn't have done it or wouldn't have done it, but I'll tell you what. It would not have been easy. And I think I probably would have laid down some requirements. Say, first of all, you go on the air, you hold a press conference, and you tell people, these ICE agents are operating under statutory mandate to do what they are doing. They are mandated under the law to apprehend, arrest, detain, and deport people who are in our country without authorization. Now, that's their job. Now, you may not agree with their doing it. I may not agree with their doing it. I'm saying he could say this to his people. But don't try to ram them with your cars. Don't go to a protest and be confronted with ICE agents and have a gun, a loaded gun. Don't go to the hotel where they're staying and try to tear through the glass window of the hotel to get to them. And don't try to shoot them or assassinate them. Don't spit on them. Don't push them. Don't assault them. They're law enforcement officers, and you are wrong if you do that. I think I'd say, you do that, then we can talk. Because I've had it with this guy. But President Trump is apparently a very forgiving man. And without any preconditions, and I'm not criticizing him for it. I'm just saying it would have been hard. That would have been hard for me. And President Trump's tough. But he did it, and I hope it takes us to a better place. But let me say about this last shooting. Now, I don't know what the investigation will reveal or what will ultimately happen. I will say this. I think that President Trump is not happy with two people being killed. And the reason I say that, I don't have any inside baseball on this or inside knowledge. The reason I say that is the way he reacts to the war in Ukraine, the way he reacts to killing of people in Nigeria. I think the president just doesn't like people being killed. And none of us should. None of us does, I trust. But as president, I think he just has a kind of visceral reaction. He doesn't like it. He thinks there's got to be another way. I think that's why he relieved Bovine from his supervisory role in Minneapolis and why he sent Tom Holman in. And while I think he's generally happy with the job Christine Ohm is doing, I don't think he's happy with the fact that she called this last guy a domestic terrorist, particularly if the evidence was not in on that yet and it may be proved that he was not. I don't know. But so having said all that, you know, and I understand the president's sentiment because, look, I don't think any of us is happy that two people have been killed in these confrontations. It's sad. But I just don't consider it to be the ICE agent's fault. I consider this to be the fault of the people who are out there confronting them in ways that are bound to create confrontation and violence. You try to ram an ICE agent with your car. You show up with a belligerent, violent, confrontational attitude, and you're carrying a weapon, I mean, you're asking for trouble. And I think that's what's happened here. As I've said before, I don't know what the facts will prove. And look, I trusted this ICE agent used good judgment and acted in a reasonable way based upon the threat that was confronted with them. But again, if you got a gun and they're trying to disarm you and you're resisting, to me, that's going to lead to a gunfight. Because you don't want to let them take your gun from you. That means you're prepared to use your gun against them. I mean, they are law enforcement officers. They have a right to disarm you. And if you start fighting with them, the likelihood is you're going to get shot and maybe get killed. And that's what happened to this guy. So we'll see what the facts prove out. But again, these are split-second decisions, folks. It's not like you get to go home and muse about it all night. You're in the moment. And as I've said, as someone, I always say I'm not a gun expert, but I'm not a novice either. I've had some training, both some military training and some tactical training since I was in the military. And I'll tell you, pulling a gun, folks, and I'm not that fast to draw, but it takes a second. It takes a second. And in close quarters, you don't have to try to aim. You pull your weapon and pull the trigger. And whatever is in front of you is going to get shot. Do you wait until you're shot to shoot back? Or given the perceived threat, do you take that threat out before that person is able to pull the firearm? Because if you let him pull it, it's probably too late. So, we'll see where it all goes. But I just think that people like Walz and Fry need to shut up. They need to stop stoking this violence. I'm sure you heard about the voicemail that was left for ICE agents. I don't know where it was sent. I guess to their office. And I'm quoting, it said, the guy says, I hope your wife dies. I hope your mom and dad die. I hope everything wrong that could go on in your life happens. I hope you have the most miserable life. And you are a traitor to the American people. I hope your mom dies. I hope your dad dies. I hope your wife dies. I hope everything that could go, I mean. Now, again, folks, I don't know what the statutory language might be for something like this federally or in Minnesota, but to me, that constitutes a threat. Now, he used the word hope, but still, when you go through this litany of everybody you think you ought to die in this context, to me, you're the person who is going to make them die. That's the implication. Now, I don't know whether that hold up in a court of law or not, but I'll tell you, to me, that is going much too far. I mean, that's far worse than saying, well, I hate you and I hope that, you know, your life is as miserable as you're making our lives. I mean, something like, okay, all right, maybe that's not a threat, maybe not, okay? Because the person didn't make any allusions to direct action, just said, well, you're making our life miserable. I hope your life is miserable too. Okay. But this, your wife dies, your mom dies, your dad dies, you're a traitor. You know, threats are up against ICE agents 8,000% since Trump took office, 8,000%. Well, of course, because before that, they weren't doing anything. And the crazies were quite happy with that. The people who don't respect the sovereignty of our country and the people who don't want us to be a sovereign nation and don't want us to have borders that are respected, those folks were happy because the ICE agents were basically doing nothing. Border Patrol was basically doing nothing. They were social workers processing people across the border. Just dumping as many of them in here as they could, which is exactly what the Democrat Party wanted. And Tim Walz said the ICE agents are beating and executing people and blah, blah, blah. You know, when border agents were enforcing the border during the Obama era and during the Biden era, and they were encountering these bad guys, they were getting injured. They were getting shot. They were facing all kinds of threats of violence and danger. And nobody seemed to care. When they were trying to stop these Haitians from crossing into the country and they were using the reins to basically control their horses, they were accused of acting like slave masters, whipping the Haitians. And it was not true. It was not true. So in other words, anything they could find to use against these people enforcing the law, they were happily willing to employ. But when it comes to an ICE agent's life being threatened, the danger they're put in, who cares? That's the mindset. Who cares? Folks, this is the kind of stuff that leads to anarchy. So again, I hope the president's discussion with these people does prove to be fruitful. But I don't have any confidence in Walz or Fry at all. I think they're kind of like Putin. They might say anything. Maybe they've decided, they looked at the numbers and they've decided that they've gone so far that they're losing some of their people, and some of their people feel they've gone too far. So now they want to talk to President Trump so they look better. But I don't think they mean anything by it. I don't think they mean well. And particularly, don't you wonder, one of the people that we've arrested, now this was not in Minnesota, but this is, you've seen the long list of people that are being arrested by ICE. One of the people arrested in this whole sweep of all these criminal illegal aliens is a guy from Ecuador. He had committed 20 child sex crimes. And I think these were in America, not to mention the ones he committed in Ecuador, in America. And the Massachusetts court system released him back on the street. He was walking the street when ICE agents arrested him. 20 sex crimes. By the way, against minors. You think, what is wrong with these people? Again, I mean, I've diagnosed it, I think, which is they're evil, they're wicked, and they belong to a cult. And the cult's rules supersede everything else. We don't care what illegal aliens do to Americans. We don't care what they do to children. We care that we get them in here. I mean, can anybody truly dispute that analysis? Or suggest that there's something wrong with what I just said, based upon observation, that's got to be the way they think. Because once again, you never, ever hear them say, yeah, I feel badly for this American. I feel badly that this happened, that this child got raped, or this person got murdered. You don't hear them say that at all. They stay completely away from criticizing any illegal alien. They justify pretty much anything they do. They're arresting our neighbors. They're arresting our people. They're making the economy of Minnesota better. Yeah, they sure are. Some of these Somalis stealing everything they can put their hands on. Looks like they would be prepared to steal everything that moves. So if you think about it on a rational, logical, factual basis, you really just end up scratching your head because you can't make sense of it. But when you think about it in crass political terms, that these are people who have decided, and I'm talking about the folks running the show, the elites, some of these protesters are useful and probably paid idiots. And they don't have a clue what's really going on. But these elites know exactly what's going on. And they know that they have determined this is their pathway to hegemony over this country, and nobody's going to take it away from them. Because that's what they're aiming for. They're aiming to turn America into California, into Vermont, into Illinois, into Maine. They're going to try to turn America into one of those kinds, try to turn Virginia, I meant to say, into one of those states as well. So, yeah, folks, we are up the creek right now, but thank God we got a paddle. The immediate earthly paddle is Donald Trump, who has just put himself in the way of all of this insanity. And that's, again, that's why they hate him. They don't hate him because he's Donald Trump. They don't care one way or the other. They hate him because he's interfering with their agenda, and he's doing it in a major way, in an effective way, in a powerful way that is actually making a difference. And that's why they hate him. And that's why I said before, they gladly see him assassinated. By the way, I said that long before Donald Trump's, before the assassination attempts on his life. I said long before that, that they'd love to see Donald Trump dead. Well, they still would. And anybody else, again, who gets in their way. But that's where we are, and we just have to pray for our country and pray that these people will ultimately get a revelation and realize just how in the world they think that what they're saying. I'm talking about people like Walz and Fry and all of those folks who are trying to break in the hotels and trying to obstruct ICE agents with their cars and trying to shoot ICE agents or stab them or kick them or spit on them or whatever. All those people. I hope they get a revelation. If they don't, they've got to be locked up. And by the way, that does include the politicians who are obstructing and inciting to violence. Because to me, when you call somebody a Nazi, you call somebody a Gestapo member, you are inciting violence. You may be using code language to do it, but what that language means is these are people who are trying to kill us. They are therefore worthy of death. I mean, Tim Walz said they're out executing people. Mass terrorists who are executing people and kidnapping people. I can't. Again, logically, you can't even fathom somebody talking that way. You really can't. But when you think about it in terms of raw power and the thirst for it, the absolute insatiable hunger for power and control, it makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense. They know most of the American people are not going to go along with this nonsense, so they need a new crop of people to vote for them long term. And they've got to play the race card, because they know, they've seen with the black community, that's one of those emotional appeals that works without any resort to facts or truth. You just make the accusations. And boom, you're done. We're good. I don't know whether you all were listening, but I substituted for, actually I didn't substitute. I was a guest on Pastor Jeff Shreve's program. And a guy called in and he says, "I can't believe you two," and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, "but I can't believe you two are supporting President Trump because he's a racist." And I stopped him. I said, "Okay." And he was about to go on. I said, No. "You made the accusation. Now back it up." You know what he wanted to talk about then? NATO. You know, that means he didn't have any facts. Because there is no factual basis for saying that President Trump hates black people or Hispanic people or anybody else. There is none. Because it's not true. Now, you could quibble with the president about Well, he didn't. He should have denounced white supremacy faster. He did denounce it. Come on. I don't know what the advisors, I know one advisor around the president who, in my view, he shouldn't have, but I'll leave that alone. And I don't know what he was telling him about, you know, don't alienate anybody who wants to support you. Just, we need every vote we can get. I don't know. But I tell you one thing, I know Donald Trump's no white supremacist, and Donald Trump's no racist. I mean, a white supremacist wouldn't care about black people in Nigeria being killed by Muslims in Nigeria because they wouldn't care about black people being killed. They think it was a good thing. A white supremacist wouldn't finance historically black colleges and universities, HBCUs, at the level to which the president has funded them, guaranteed them funding help from the federal government. And by the way, I could question that too, because in my view, okay, you want to have HBCUs? Great, do it. You don't have enough people who support that you need money from the federal government? Yeah. And of course, these are not legally segregated schools, but practically they are, let's face it, because they're for black people. I think I shared this with you all, but see, that's the other thing. They've got to label the president as a racist because by doing so, they make sure that black folks will always view him with suspicion. That's what they're trying to achieve, okay? And I know, look, we're not here at AFR to support candidates and campaigns. But I'm really talking about the principle of this. Because one of the ways that people control and manipulate, as I've said earlier, is using the race card. Because they know that it has emotional impact that facts and information won't necessarily have. But you throw that accusation out there, you put that out there, and then, wow, okay, you got the person dancing on a string. You know, you become the puppeteer. You yell racism, and the person just responds. And, oh, yeah, whoa, yeah, whoa, we've got to stop that. Well, we got to stop Donald Trump. Yes, indeed, we got to stop Donald Trump. What's he done that's racist? Let's not let facts and information cloud our judgment here. After all, what do we need with facts and information when we have accusation, right? And that's really all we need. So we just have to continue to pray and work on these issues and to stand on these issues. That's why my stand at Ward's Dinner, you know, we're the only, because I was talking to a conservative icon. If I mentioned his name, many of you would know, but I won't because I'm just not going to share the conversation. But we're talking, as a matter of fact, yesterday, and I was saying that, you know, we're the only organization in America, whose mission is to reach those people who have been manipulated by the left, indoctrinated by the left, used by the left for their own purposes, and to set them free so they can think for themselves and analyze for themselves and think through the way they're being used politically in order to promote an agenda that really has nothing to do with them and does not help them at all. Not at all. And, you know, the person would say, yeah, you all are the only ones for whom that is your mission. There are other great organizations doing great things, don't get me wrong, and it may touch on that issue, but that is not something that we touch on. That's our bread and butter. Because we know that as long as they have that leverage over that kind of group, just like what we're facing in Virginia right now, 93% of black voters in Virginia voted for Abigail Spinberger. 93%. Folks, you don't get 93% of people doing anything, generally speaking. But that's because they played the race card to the hilt. They've used it. That's how that incorrigible Attorney General got elected, Jay Jones, after having mused about killing not only Todd Gilbert, but seeing his children die in their mother's arms. Now, folks, let me just ask you, because I know for me, I've had a lot of people anger me. I've had a lot of people upset me in my lifetime. I have never, ever, ever had such thoughts, or, and certainly therefore never expressed such thoughts, as to want what a person I consider to be an adversary or even an enemy to see their children die in their mother's arms. I mean, who thinks like that? I mean, just stop and think for a moment. Who thinks like that? I mean, to me, thinking like that and speaking that way raises questions whether you're a sociopath or a psychopath. I've never had a thought like that in my life. And this guy not only thought it, but actually put it in writing and sent it to somebody. I mean, I didn't like Barack Obama or his presidency, but I never had that kind of thoughts, those kind of thoughts again. In fact, I remember very specifically defending his children, saying, you know, his children didn't make the choice to be in politics. Why are people attacking his children? Because I didn't like that. To me, that just seems fundamentally unfair. But this guy not only attacks his children, he wants his children dead. And he got elected. Because you see, when you turn on the racial thinking, you turn off the intellect and the ability to analyze. You know, it's like a blinding darkness. You can't see anything except what you're being told. Oh, it's just, they're just out to get him. Well, apparently he's the one who's out to get somebody, including innocent children. And yet he got elected. So that's why, you know, our organization is dedicated to ending this kind of this kind of wicked, twisted thinking, and using such thinking to manipulate people and keep them under your control, because that's what it boils down to. And so we've got Pray For Us here in Virginia, because we got our hands full in Virginia. I don't know whether you all seen on national news, but they got a whole package. I mean, immediately they jumped on taxes, and they're going to tax everything that moves. I mean, it's amazing. They want to put 11% tax on all sales of firearms. They want to put ban assault weapons. They want to put a tax on deliveries. So not only do you pay the tax for the item or the retail thing you have delivered, now you're going to pay a tax on the delivery itself into Virginia. I mean, this is unheard of, as far as I know. But you know, like Ronald Reagan said, this is the way liberals think. If it moves, regulate it and tax it. And that's just the beginning, because they're going to try to enshrine in the Constitution the principle of absolutely unfettered killing of unborn babies on demand. I mean, they will turn America into a dystopian state. And by the way, a state that cannot possibly survive, because the Bible says sin is a reproach to any people. That word reproach means it brings you down. They're setting up Virginia and all these other states for fall, and they'd love to set America up for fall, because they don't care. They don't think in those terms. What they think of is, as long as we are in charge, we don't really care what happens to people. We just care that the money keeps coming in and the power remains in our hands. That's what we care about. Now, folks, that's the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me God. Because there's no other analysis of their behavior that makes sense. All right, well, look. I want to move on to one other issue. By the way, again, while they're doing all this, President Trump has brought the murder rate in America to the lowest it's been since 1900. Now, think about that. He has brought the country's murder rate down to the lowest rate it's been in over a century. In over a century. And they're complaining. About, so what do they want? They want more murder? Oh, yeah, let's get President Trump out of the way. He's interfering with all the murders that we've got going on in the country. Because they're locking people up. And a lot of these murders are apparently being performed by these, committed by these illegal aliens. You get them out of the way, guess what? The murder rate goes down. And 2025 showed the biggest drop in the murder rate in American history. The biggest drop in American history. Now, folks, the data is not lying, and these things are telling a tale, and it's a true one, about the impact, the positive impact that President Trump is having on the country. You know, the man they're calling a tyrant, and they're calling him a dictator and all that. And, you know, and I have to tell you, folks, maybe I shouldn't take it this way, but I take personal umbrage because I am a lover of freedom. I am a lover of personal and individual liberty. I mean, I say every American who understands who we are, every American has got some libertarianism in us, in the sense that, generally speaking, we want government to stay out of our way and just leave us alone. I mean, we don't need you. We want to make our own way. We want to live our own lives. We want to do what we're called to do. And we don't want you bothering us. But these folks, these leftists, they want government to be chief cook, bottle washer, mom, dad, abortionist, surgeon, doing quote unquote gender affirming care. They want government in every aspect of our lives. They got the nerve to call President Trump a tyrant and a dictator and all that. But I take personal umbrage because to think that I would support somebody who wants to take away my freedom, as they say, I was born in the day, but I wasn't born yesterday. I don't care who it was. If it was Donald Trump or you name it, Ronald Reagan. If I thought that somebody had designs on taking away our individual liberty, I would be against them, period. And I wouldn't care who it is. And I'm sure you probably feel the same way. But these idiots don't give us the credit because it's not really about liberty. It's about their wanting control and Donald Trump being in their way because Donald Trump is reducing the size and power of government, not increasing it, except in areas that they don't like. Like he's saying to universities, you will not operate on the basis of race, which is consistent with the Constitution. He's saying to doctors and hospitals that in any way depend upon federal funding, you will not operate on and mutilate minor children, claiming that you're going to somehow alter their gender. You will not do it. See, that's the kind of government interference they don't want. But as far as the government imposing its will on you and me and the whole country, that they want. They want government to be able to say, not only are we going to marry two men and two women and call it a marriage, but we're going to absolutely demand that you accept it as such and that you adhere to it as such, or we're going to punish you. I mean, the whole FACE Act, which does protect churches and Christians in our worship. I mean, protects all people, all people of all religious faiths in their worship. But, you know, this encroachment on a church, they don't care about that. See, government's supposed to be protecting those people, those church people, from in their worship, from having their freedom of religion encroached upon. That they don't want. But as far as you as a Christian being able to sing or pray or stand in front of a clinic that is dedicated to the killing of unborn babies and doing what you can spiritually to stop that, oh, no, you're public enemy number one. They want government to put you in jail. And they did. And thank God Donald Trump got him out and pardoned those people that these idiots put in prison because they're trying to save the lives of unborn children. These people are so dedicated to the devil. It's a shame. It's a national scandal. Because child sacrifice, folks, is one of the devil's highest desires. And he's been doing it throughout time immemorial. And all of us who stand against it are public enemies number one. President Trump just happens to be at the top of the 10 most wanted list. But all of us who are against it, they hate. Because they can't help their bloodlust and their desire to kill unborn babies. It's in them spiritually. It's in them. Because they're demonically influenced. And when you're demonically influenced, you want to do those things that please the devil. And that's what that stuff is. It is devilish. You know, I just did a National Awakening conference call on most Tuesdays. And we just had one with Brian Bomberger. If you've never heard of Brian Bomberger, please check him out. His organization is called Radiance Foundation. I think it's radiancefoundation.com. But you can look it up. I think it's Radiance Foundation. It is a pro-life organization. Ryan is a product of rape. He was adopted. And he is a pro-life warrior. I mean, a pro-life warrior through and through. And he and I were talking about this issue. And I said, you know, think about the perversion and think about the confusion that it takes. Because folks, now please listen to me and think about what I'm saying for a second. If you are a person who has children or you have grandchildren, you would give your life to protect your children or your grandchildren. And most of you, all of us probably who are listening to me, wouldn't even hesitate. We wouldn't think about it. You know why? Because I really believe it's something that God put in us. It is biological. It is genetic. It is natural to protect one's own progeny. Even the animal kingdom does that. Think about the perversion and the reprobate mind it takes to not only resist or ignore that biological imperative, but what it takes to actually celebrate the killing of one's own progeny, to celebrate it. And that's how perverse the left and the whole baby killing industry is. And that's how much they get into the psyches of women. They convince them that killing their own progeny is something to celebrate. Something good. I mean, just think, your mind has got to be so perverted and so messed up that, I mean, I don't know what it would show in a Rorschach test, but I'll tell you, it wouldn't be good. Because that's unnatural. It is unnatural. And yet, that's where a lot of people are. Bragging about it, wearing t-shirts. He and I were talking about wearing t-shirts, you know. I've had 5 abortions. I've killed 5 of my own progeny. I really believe the life issue, folks, is the canary in the coal mine in terms of the future of our country. You know, I'm going to end with this. We just had the March for Life this past Friday, so this is an appropriate place for me to end, even though I've been talking mainly about immigration. But again, President Trump is a pro-life president. He's the only president to ever show up at the March for Life. J.D. Vance showed up and spoke at the March for Life live. The president sent in a video. And I know the president can talk in a way that kind of makes you wonder because, you know, he understands politics and he knows that in many, many circles in our country, stopping the killing of unborn babies is not a popular thing. But I'm convinced that we must become a pro-life society if we're going to survive. That's why I've got a constitutional amendment that defines life at conception and personhood at conception. And I am convinced, folks, that that's where we've got to go if we are going to survive as a nation. We cannot survive as a nation spilling the blood of our own innocent children. We cannot survive as a nation doing that. We must be a pro-life nation. Let me see if I can quickly find that before I go and read that to you. Because I really do think this is the issue that we have got to deal with if we are going to survive as a nation. Well, this, not only this, but we've also got to deal with the issue of this racial division that they have, that the left has foisted on the country, trying to basically violating a very important biblical principle that, as Jesus said in Matthew 12:25, a kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation, and a house divided against itself cannot stand. So, I think that's an issue that we have got to deal with. And I think that the way to do it is through a constitutional amendment. And the reason why I say that is I would much rather lose the debate on life by having a debate about life itself. Okay? In other words, about when does life begin? Rather than, well, when do you have pain? And when do you know, you can win that argument, as we said, you know, you can win the argument over, you know, well, we can't abort a baby after 15 weeks, but 95% of the abortions occur before 15 weeks. So have you really won? Well, maybe you saved a few lives, but you've left the vast majority of unborn babies to be slaughtered. I think we've got to force the American people to grapple with the nature of life itself. And when does it really begin? As I've said many times, the question for me is, when were you you? When did you become you? And if you want to say, well, it wasn't at the moment of conception, well, then I want to know at the moment of conception, who was it? Was it somebody else? You see, it is, folks, it is a seamless, here it is, I've got it. It is a seamless development from conception to death, really. Because throughout that time, you are developing in one way or another. And as you get older, of course, you're developing primarily, we hope, intellectually and spiritually, no longer developing in the same way, at least physically, because you're deteriorating physically in many ways, but you ought to still be developing emotionally, intellectually, spiritually. So you're in a constant state of development. Well, is the you today different from the you yesterday? Of course not. And the you today is no different than the you at conception, except you were in the earliest stages of your human development. And that's the only difference. The only difference. In the same way that there's a vast difference between my granddaughter when she was born, and I would hold her on my chest, and she would sleep an hour or 2 hours, and then wake up to be fed by her mother. And my granddaughter today, who is running around and talking and expressing herself in complete sentences, but it's the same child. Here's our constitutional amendment, and then I gotta go. Life and personhood shall be recognized from the moment of conception for purposes of equal protection under this Constitution, the laws and legal rights of citizens, and all persons residing in or subject to the jurisdiction of the United States of America. It's just that simple. Life and personhood shall be recognized from the moment of conception for purposes of equal protection under this Constitution, the laws and legal rights of citizens, and all persons residing in or subject to the jurisdiction of the United States of America. There it is. Now, why don't we debate that? Because, see, I really think part of the reason why we lose on this issue is we don't confront the American people with that. And, you know, you can have all kinds of opinion about, well, when does the baby feel pain? And when can the baby live outside the womb? And, but to me, there can really be no debate of the fact that from the moment of conception, it is a person, it is a life, it is a human being. And that human being simply goes from one stage of development to another seamlessly all the way to the moment of death. Okay, well, that's going to do it for today. I've got to go. So listen, folks, just keep praying for our country. Keep fighting. Pray for us here in Virginia. And by the way, don't forget our Stand Awards dinner. It's going to be a big to-do, and we'll have a wonderful time. We're going to bless and encourage some great patriots from around the country, and we hope you'll come. It's going to be at the Tyson's Corner Marriott in Virginia, Tyson's Corner, Virginia, on Tuesday, May the 12th, this year, 2026. We don't have tickets on sale yet, but we will soon, and we'll put those on the website and make those available to you in fairly short order. But please, put it in your schedule today. If nothing more, even if you say, well, I know I'm not going to be able to make that, would you pray for us? Pray that this is the very best Stand Awards dinner we've ever had, and that God will use it spiritually, that God will bring the people out to celebrate with us, and that God will bless us financially through this breakfast, because this is our biggest event of the year. So God bless each and every one of you. Look, you know what to do, folks. Stand up, step up, speak up, and refuse to back up. Because we cannot be defeated if we will not quit. Because we are on God's side. God bless everybody.